All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, welcome. This is American Vindicta. Oh, man, do we have something for you today. Have you heard of this whole Novavax conspiracy yet? And I don't want to say conspiracy as in, like, you know, it's made up. It took a conspirator, a group of conspirators, to create what we're about to play for you. What we're about to play for you comes from the Dr. Jane Ruby Show. This segment was actually on the Stu Peters Network show off of Rumble. You'd never be able to play this on YouTube. And it's really sad. I really like Stu Peters and I really like Dr. Jane Ruby. I think what she's about to explain may just blow your mind. Imagine, if you will, the next series of vaccinations are going to come from moths and spiders. So there's a book that was wrote many years ago by Michael Crichton, probably one of my favorite authors. And he wrote a book called Prey. And in this book, it actually talks about how they create these nanoparticles for this artificial intelligence, and they use the bacteria E. coli to produce the molecules, which then they control through electrical manipulation, and more or less it becomes sentient to an extent, and it starts going after people, right? So it's a fantastical book. It's a good read. But, you know, I just started reading this book again. This is probably only the third or fourth time I've read this book. And as I'm reading it, I'm actually getting into the part of the book where there's tornado-like swarms of these robots, microscopic sand-size robots. And, you know, they're talking about all the fantastical ways that it was made and how the thing's just completely lost control of its system. And it's starting to kill all the creatures that are outside of the laboratory in Nevada. So it's killed all the birds and the rabbits and the bugs and the lizards and the coyotes. And now it's starting to try to get back into the installation and kill the people who created it. And I'm like, you know, this is a really fun book. Thank God stuff like this will never happen. No one's that stupid. I'll be damned if I wasn't proved wrong yesterday. So, thanks to Bob Griswold for calling and letting me know this little nugget of intelligence. Look, I don't trust these Frankenstein doctors and their Frankenstein vaccines, especially once we start having to go to the point that we need to have a spider to create our vaccine, so we inject the spider with something and then we, what, mush it up and dissect it? Or, I mean, I don't even know how you get what it is that they're talking about. And I'm going to butcher most of this because I'm not a scientist, guys. You know, I'm a shooter. I don't understand the simplicities that are here within this explanation, but I'm shocked that this is where we're at right now. But hey, are you really, though? Are you really that shocked that this is the route that we're going? All right, this is Dr. Jane Ruby. Please listen to what she's trying to say and go and follow her on Rumble and follow the Stu Peters Network on Rumble. You know, they can't be on YouTube, so we need to be able to support people like this as much as possible. And if you don't know, just like how you can support me, by going to Rumble, by going to YouTube and subscribing and commenting and liking and sharing, you actually help boost the monetization, more or less, of our videos, which helps us get paid so that we can continue to do this. I've only been doing this for about, I think, 3 or 4 months now. And I just now started to see income, and I think I'm up to like $37 on YouTube. So, woohoo. But please like, share, subscribe. I've had over 40,000 people visit my YouTube channel within the last month, and I only have 1,700 subscribers. So if you like what you hear, please share it. Please subscribe. Please like and comment. Even if you don't like it, still comment. You know, I'm not one of those guys who's going to sit here and lambast you and attack you. I don't do that. I want to have an honest conversation with people. Hey, you can ask some of the flat earthers that are out there. I'll have an honest conversation with you and not try and beat you up over every comment. I don't agree with it, but it doesn't mean I won't sit here and have a conversation with you over it. let's get into this.
The agency formerly known as the FDA, now a department at Pfizer and Moderna, has, as expected, authorized on an emergency basis the use of Novavax, a deadly moth DNA spike protein shot in the United States. They also approved Novavax's use of tree bark toxins. And I'll review the countless deaths from these mRNA bioweapon shots from around the world. When will people figure it out? And how do we know that the White House and the FDA are criminally colluding to get this shot into babies? Because they admit they already have the shipments ready to go, weeks before the FDA has even held their meetings. So Novavax uses the mRNA technology, and it still uses the lipid nanoparticle that's incredibly dangerous and toxic. But let me show you how they do it. Let's take a look at picture one, Novavax, how it's made. And so here's the vaccine. It's not a vaccine design, right? They claim that what they're doing is they're taking the mRNA code, they're putting it into moths, and they're letting moths or stimulating moths and other arthropods like spiders to generate billions of these toxic spike proteins. Then they extract those protein, those spikes. They're made based on a code for a synthetic created in a computer in silico using materials never before seen in nature, never before used in human beings. And they're stimulating the moths to make billions. Then they extract those toxic spikes. In other words, your body's not making them from the RNA code. The moths are. Then they take them with the moth DNA, hello, and then they embed those on the graphene sheets, which they then turn into the graphene tubules that then goes into the adjuvant of the lipid nanoparticle to get it into every cell in your body. So you still have a problem with a genetic code that is going to embed in your cells, and God knows what it's going to create from the moths. And then you have directly injected billions of these toxic spike proteins that are then going to go throughout your body. They're going to extrude from a lot of your cells. They're going to damage a lot of your organs, like your heart, your spleen. It's going to wipe out your fertility. And if you are lucky enough to conceive, and this goes for all of these shots, the next generation through recombinant combination of mom and dad's genetic material can have offspring that will suffer and be damaged and freak manifestations. We don't even know what those are going to look like yet.
You know what's really interesting about this is when the good doctor said that the prodigy of the people who take this vaccination, so the children, which only come from a man and a woman, I feel like I have to say that at times, the children could be genetically mutated. Freak, as she said. Not trying to mean it in a demeaning way, probably trying to scare people. You know, if you don't want your children having little antenna or multiple eyes or arms or whatever, don't take this effing shot. I mean, probably many of you like me listen to an expert like this and you just think, you know what? That's just another reason for why I don't get vaccinated, not doing this stuff anymore. I got all those stupid vaccinations while I was in the military. I got so much anthrax running through my veins that I'm probably incapable of catching most serious diseases. And I would like to think that our scientists, who, you know, you would think, like the doctors out there, do no harm, would be their Hippocratic Oath. But obviously, man, we're dealing with some freakish people, all right? I don't know why it is that we're experimenting the way we are, but, you know, you're not going to get Superman powers or Spider-Man powers out of this, all right? That's fantastical. That's not the way the real world is going to work. You may be, you may be supernaturally influenced by a demon. You may be supernaturally blessed by the Lord, like Samson. But you're not going to get some inherent power. And I already know because I've seen some of the comments sections and looking at this stuff where people are like, oh, maybe I can become like Spider-Man. Well, you know, I feel like as a grown man, I need to inform other grown men that Spider-Man isn't real. And it's very sad to see how serious people take these conversations. You know, and I'm sure most people are just trolling each other. I'm sure most people are very aware that this vaccination, quote, vaccination, sounds horrific. Probably not a good idea to take, maybe. But at the same time, I also know how stupid people are. And how gullible the larger mass of America is. Of course, not any of you listening right now. But just as people sounded the alarm with the COVID-19 vaccine, and still sound the alarm on the COVID-19 vaccine, tens of thousands of people can die from a vaccine within a year. And people line up for the fourth shot. You don't think that they'll line up for the spider shot or the moth shot? Let's go into this example. Do you think there could be actual physical repercussions from this type of vaccine where you're messing with the genome, right? Where you're messing with DNA? I would tell you yes. And here is probably one of the better examples as to why. May I introduce to you Freckles, the spider goat. Now, if you are not aware, you can go to theguardian.com and you can actually look this lovely article up on Freckles, the spider goat. And I'm going to read this entire article to you and then a few others just to pound it into the skulls of the people who are naive enough to take this garbage and put it into your blood. And I honestly believe, this is part of Revelation, where our Lord said that if he had not returned in time, there would be no flesh left alive. I remember Steve Quayle talking about this so many years ago, and so many people laughed at him. They gaffed him off. They called him crazy. They demonized him and attacked him. And I'll be damned if it isn't like every month something happens and something that Steve told me years and years ago comes true. So let's get into this. This is wrote by Adam Rutherford, Synthetic Biology and the Rise of the Spider Goats. Freckles looks like a perfectly normal kid. She has bright eyes, a healthy white pelt, and gambols happily with Pudding, Sweetie, and her five other siblings, exactly as you might imagine young goats do. Until I fend her off, she's very keen on chewing my trousers. To the casual observer and to goat herds, she knows no signs that she is not a perfectly normal farmyard goat. But Freckles is a long way from normal. She is an extraordinary creation, an animal that could not have existed at any point in history before the 21st century. She is all goat, but she also has something extra in every one of her cells. Freckles is also part spider. That is, what we can do now with genetics, extreme crossbreeding. If 20th century biology was about taking living things apart to find out how they work. The current era is defined by putting them back together, but not necessarily as evolution decreed, and certainly without the clumsy constraints of mating. Freckles is the result of genetic engineering, but our mastery of manipulating DNA has evolved into an even more extreme form of tinkering, broadly called synthetic biology. I've been tracking this emerging field since finishing my PhD in genetics 10 years ago, but intensely in the last year as a presenter of the BBC's flagship science strand, Horizon. Freckles is the creation of Randy Lewis, a professor of genetics at Utah State University. The farm is a university outpost where they research modern farming techniques, teach animal husbandry, and raise what are inevitably referred to as spider goats. Randy, like many of the other scientists here in Logan, Utah, has farming in his blood. So although a creation that is part goat, part spider, might seem like an idea of born science fiction, as far as Randy is concerned, it's simply advanced farming, breeding animals to produce things that we want. Here's a quote. "We're interested in dragline silk, the silk that spiders catch themselves with when they fall," as he tells me in the Midwest Lilt. "It's stronger than Kevlar. It really has some amazing properties for any kind of fiber." In a sense, spider goats are an extension of the farming we've been doing for 10,000 years. All livestock and arable has been carefully bred, each cross being a genetic experiment of its own. "And the trouble is, you can't farm spiders," says Randy, with an almost comic deadpan face. "They're very cannibalistic." He and his team took the gene that encodes dragline silk from an orb weaver spider and placed it among the DNA that prompts milk production in the udders. This genetic circuit was then inserted in an egg and implanted into a mother goat. Now, when Freckles lactates, her milk is full of spider silk protein. "We milk Freckles together and process it in the lab to leave only the silk proteins. With a glass rod, we delicately lift out a single fiber of what's very obviously spider silk and spool it on a reel. It has amazing and desirable properties, which is why Randy's seemingly bizarre research is so robustly funded. In the medical field, we already know that we can produce spider silk that's good enough to be used in ligament repair. We already know we can make it strong enough to be as strong as elastic. We've been doing studies that show that you can put it in the body and you don't get inflammation and you don't get ill. We hope within a couple of years that we're going to be testing to see exactly the best designs and the best materials we can form from it." The instructions for all creatures that have ever lived, as far as we know, are written in the code of the DNA, tucked away in the heart of living cells. Given the bewildering diversity of life on Earth, this system is incredibly conservative. All life is based on an alphabet of just four letters, which, when arranged in the right order, spell out proteins. And all life is made of or by proteins. So what this means is that the code for making silk in a spider is written in exactly the same language as the code for making goat's milk. Since the advent of genetic engineering, we have been able to exploit this code and cut and paste bits of DNA from any one species into another, identifying the genetic basis of all cancers and inherited diseases came from this technology. Human or mouse genes have been spliced into bacteria so we could study and experiment on those damaged bits of code. Now, this editing technology has progressed to the extent that all bits of DNA code are effectively interchangeable between all species. In fact, Freckles and the other spider goats are not even the cutting edge. The loosely defined field of synthetic biology has come to incorporate even more extreme forms of genetic tinkering. The most striking headlines so far came when American biologist Craig Venter announced in 2010 that he had created the world's first synthetic life form, Cynthia, a.k.a. Mycoplasma mycotes, JCVI-SYN1.0, was a cell whose genetic code, copied and modified from an existing bacterium, had been assembled not by its parents, but by a computer. That code, including literary quotations and website addresses, was then jammed into the eviscerated chassis of another similar cell, and the whole thing booted up. It did live, and it hadn't lived before. But to say that he had created life is a stretch that Venter, a master of PR, as well as an accomplished scientist, allowed to foment and then press lapped up. It's more accurate to say that he rebooted life, his aim being to create a living template onto which new genetic functions could be built. Nevertheless, it remains an astonishing technical achievement, showing our dominance over DNA. Not only can we modify one or two genes, we can make enough to power up a living thing. The scientists who work in the synthetic biology field often take a perfunctory reductionist view of what they do. Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor Ron Wise is a founding father of this field, a purist who started fiddling with the code of life while coding computers. Quote, "I decided to take what we understand in computing and apply that programming to biology. To me, that's really the essence of synthetic biology." Now, this may sound glib. Life forms are very complex at every level. If there is one concrete thing we have learned from the billions spent on reading our own genetic code, it's that biology is messy. Scientists are often confounded by baffling noise in the molecules that make up living organisms, unpredictable variation sets among unfathomable sophistications. Wise and his comrades at the BioBricks Foundation want to strip out all of these noise in biology and turn it into pure engineering, where organisms can be treated like machines and their inner workings are component parts. Genes have evolved over millions of years to bestow survival on their hosts by having very specific functions. By standardizing these genetic elements in an online registry, anyone can piece them together in any order to create biological circuits with entirely designed purpose. Even the language used in more the stuff of electrical engineering than traditional biology. Imagine a program, a piece of DNA that goes into a cell and says, if cancer, then make a protein that kills the cancer cell. If not, just go away. That's kind of a program that we're able to write and implement and test in living cells right now, says Ron Weiss, as he's describing a study his team published last autumn showing that by using the logic of computer circuits combined with BioBricks parts, they had built a cancer assassin cell. The logic of the genetic circuit initially distinguishes a cancer cell from a healthy cell using a set of five criteria. If then, destroys the tumor cell if it is satisfied those conditions. This sniper targeting is the opposite of the blunderbuss approach of chemotherapy, and blunderbuss meaning shotgun approach, which can destroy both tumor and healthy cells with reckless abandon. Over the last few years, BioBricks has grown into a global phenomenon. The Registry of Standard Biological Parts currently contains thousands of bits of DNA, all freely available, and this democratization of science is built into the BioBricks ethos. Every year, undergraduate students compete in an international competition to think of a problem and design and build its solution using only the parts available in the registry. 2011's European champions from the Imperial College of London designed a system for preventing soil erosion and the conversion of land into desert. There is a remix culture within these teams. It's a serious play. The grand prize is a silver Lego brick. And they came from the diverse backgrounds of math, engineering, even astrophysics. Unfettered by the narrowly defined science disciplines under which I did my DNA research. The ease of access to this bleeding-edge technology is breathtaking. Last summer, in suburban Sunnyvale, California, I hung out at a gathering of synthetic biology weekend hobbyists, self-styled as biohackers, with the excellent name BioCurious. There, high school students were learning about biology by introducing fluorescent proteins from deep-sea jellyfish into bacteria to make them glow in the dark. In 2009, three scientists won Nobel Prizes for this work. Already, it is literally child's play. As with any great revelations, there are those who stand to make a killing after the doors are kicked open. At the other end of the scale from the open source, open access utopia of BioBricks, synthetic biology commercial enterprises are emerging. The tech may be new, but the fields are not. With synthetic biology only a few years old, the most intense areas of commercialized synthetic biology are in fuel and drug production. California biotech companies such as LS9 and Amiris, AMYRIS, have plowed millions of dollars into developing synthetic organisms that will produce diesel. In its futuristic labs in Emeryville, Amiris has modified brewer's yeast so that instead of fermenting sugar to produce alcohol, diesel seeps out of every cell. This synthetic biodiesel is already used to power trucks in Brazil. Amiris' ambition is to scale up from pilot plants to industrial-scale production. When I asked Chief Science Officer Jack Newman if they envisioned their biofuel replacing natural oil, he suspiciously coyed, "I'll be excited about a billion liters." One significant fear has less to do with science and more to do with the shifting balance of economic power. Technology watchdogs and campaign groups such as Friends of the Earth and ETC Group initially called unrealistically for a total ban on synthetic biology, even though it lacked a workable definition. ETC has modified its stance to focus on the industrialization of these processes and specifically the fact that synthetic biodiesel organisms need food. Jim Thomas, who works for ETC, passionately feels that the control of fuel production is simply shifting from one set of corporate giants to another. Large companies are buying up bits and pieces of land so that they can grow sugarcane, and then they're feeding it to vats of synthetic microbes to make fuels. Synthetic organisms at this point should not be out of there in the environment. They shouldn't be in their industry. That's irresponsible. And it's inappropriate. That's a quote from Jim Thomas. The culture of biology is rapidly changing, and scientists and the public need to keep up. Synthetic biology has the potential to generate a new industrial revolution. It's perhaps the defining technology for the 21st century, and it is happening now. Without an informed public discourse, fear of this unprecedented and sometimes unsettling technology may hinder the world changing promise that it harbors. Quote, "Prediction is very difficult, especially about the future. As the great physicist Niels Bohr once said, But science fiction never got close to the outlook that came with the advent of synthetic biology. It is now easy to picture a world in which your torn ligaments are replaced with ones made from spider silk produced by goat's milk, where medicine is served by living programmable machines that seek and destroy only the cells that cause the disease, and where you will drive a car powered by diesel grown by brewer's yeast. Welcome to the future. That's an article wrote by Adam Rutherford. He is a science writer and broadcaster, and I thought the article was so damn well written that I might as well just share it with you. Now, that was wrote, guys, back in 2012. That was 10 years ago. Where do you think we are now with all of this? And once again, if you know the Michael Crichton book, Prey, let me repeat this. Where medicine is served by living programmable machines that seek and destroy only the cells. That is the basis behind the Pred-Prey, as it's called, the Predator-Prey machines that are used in the book Prey, wrote by Michael Crichton. I find it fascinating how science fiction and science, at a lot of times, it's like they're on parallel paths. And I think science fiction has always been a way for scientists to say, what if I had the possibility, if I had the funding, if people just let down on the ethics of it, we could do miraculous things. And I hear these scientists say stuff like this, and you know, in a lot of ways I applaud them for what they're trying. It is a admirable thing to try and cure cancer. But if you ever read the book I Am Legend, that is also how they got the vampires of New York, by trying to cure cancer. So once again, science fiction and the novels of science fiction, I'm actually working on writing a science fiction novel. How funny is that? Science fiction will, let's say it like this. If science is on a certain linear progressive path, science fiction serpentines from the right to the left of the path. And it follows and guides, and sometimes is in front of science, and sometimes it's behind it. But the two always seem to have a similar path that they're going down. And it's the advancement in science, the advancement in the human race, and always pushing the envelope of how far can we go until we went too damn far and now we're about to blow up the world, or we're going to kill everybody, right? So that's where ethics is involved. You have plenty of madmen, plenty of mad women in the field of science who, you know, are, I guess you could say, almost too smart for their own good. And they think that pushing everything to the limit is the best thing to do. Now, I will say this. If we could create biodiesel out of brewer's yeast and really make that work, you know, and it's more economical to make, hey, you know what? I'm not going to stop a company from doing that. Fracking hurts the ground. And I come from a heavily oil-filled, roughneck family. And I've worked in the oil plants before. But I do understand that there is environmental risk to making petroleum products. However, what is the risk to making this synthetic fuel by accidentally releasing, as Jim Thomas said, by accidentally releasing these microorganisms, these synthetic organisms that shouldn't be there? They shouldn't be in any environment, and they shouldn't be in that industry, and that it's irresponsible, it's inappropriate. Well, if that's what he believes, and he's one of the guys who's creating this stuff, then where are we at right now? And is it too far of a thought to think that we may have an introduction to vaccinations that can cure from the common cold to AIDS and HIV or Ebola? And there may be a repercussion to that. And the repercussion could possibly be that you could actually lose your salvation by changing the DNA of a human being and inserting moth, inserting spider DNA. At that point in time, does a Christian say, I would rather live with the debilitating disease and die than potentially run the risk of losing my salvation by adding 20 or 30 years to my life, potentially, or longer, and not being fully human anymore? Is that one of the symptoms, possibly, of the mark of the beast? You know, many people say that the mark of the beast is a microchip. It's obviously some sort of a mark in your forehead or in your right hand. One of the things I did like in this article, which I really think brings a lot of this to light, really brings things together, is that you can use certain organisms and synthetic materials like spider silk made from the spider goat to make your microchips, and that way they blend seamlessly with your DNA. They blend seamlessly with your body, and your body doesn't reject it. Because as far as I've read, and I've read all the way to the end of Revelation, it never says that the body rejects the mark. So whatever the mark of the beast is, would obviously be something that is almost symbiotic with your body and fits very well, right? So, you know, once again, this is the material. This is the industry. These are the madmen who don't even know really the path that the world will eventually go down, but they're creating the infrastructure of the Antichrist mark of the beast. We're going to go to a commercial, and we'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, you will own nothing, and you will love it. And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And we're back. One last note here for the commercials. Mountain-State-Survival.com, along with Ready Made Resources, has been one of our longest running sponsors. Currently, right now, we have two sponsors for the show. If you would like to be a sponsor for this show, or if you know anyone that you think would be a good sponsor for this show and you want to reach out to them and say, hey, Doug Thornton from American Vindicta would be a good fit for your product, please reach out to them. Let me know. If you want to be a sponsor, please go to AmericanVindictaShow@gmail.com and hit me up. We can talk about it. Thank you very much for supporting me. buying the stuff from My Patriot Supply helps to support this this operation that I have. And if you don't have a lot of food, you need to get food right now. My Patriot Supply is a great place for you to go and pick up a bulk supply of this food for you and for your family. I get a 10% commission out of that. So anything that you buy from there, you go through my website, you click on the ad that has My Patriot Supply, you buy off of that, and then I get 10% commission off of it. So kudos to you guys who do that. Mountain-State-Survival.com. Right now is the perfect time to be picking up probably the best tasting survival food that is out there, and that is Peak Refuel. I cannot say enough good things about Peak Refuel. The elk ragu is my favorite. I could probably eat that 4 or 5 times a day while out in the bush and not have any really bitches, moans, or complaints about it. The food is that good. Listen, I've ate from Wise. I've ate from My Patriot Supply. I've ate from the military MREs to basically any type of meals ready to eat that the government served me for the last 15 years. And they all suck. You get the calories that you need, but you don't get the taste. Mountain House, another great company, cannot stand next to Peak Refuel when it comes to the taste. All right? Peak Refuel is not my sponsor. My Patriot Supply is my sponsor. So am I creating a little bit of maybe a little bit of a hostile work environment? Sure, why not? It is what it is. Okay? Peak Refuel that is sold right now Ready Made Resources and at Mountain State Survival. That's mountain-state-survival.com. They are going to run out of this food. The government is buying up the food right now from all the food producers I just named to you. They're being tapped. That infinite well that is always going to be there on Amazon and on the internet where you can just go and click a couple buttons away and order and your food's there within a couple days. It's not going to be there when all these lockdowns come back. And that's what they're telling us. They're telling us that the lockdowns are coming back. Listen, in D.C., the mayor just announced they had their first case of monkeypox that came from a child. New York City is being run amok with monkeypox. Strange, because it's happening from a certain community of people. And then also on the West Coast and the East Coast, we're having monkeypox being propped up everywhere. It's also in Tennessee. So this is moving, okay? Is it really that big of a deal? Nah, hey, it is what it is, all right? If you're not a part of a certain community, then it shouldn't bother you. However, I just read an article that said that people not part of that community, of that LGBTQRS pedophilia community, are eventually going to be introduced to monkeypox. Here's a really good thought for you. If anyone in your child's school comes down with monkeypox, take them out of the school. Don't leave them in there. Don't run the risk. I firmly believe monkeypox is an introduction, just like COVID was, to kill the immune system, to bring forth more infirmities within the people's body, and then the bad plagues will come. And they will be ready with synthetic biology. They'll be ready to produce to you the moth DNA, the spider DNA. Oh, it's in the vaccines. Don't worry about it. It'll make you feel better. Yeah, I'm not trusting my life to these people, all right? Now, look, I understand that the options I just gave may not work for everybody. I'm sorry if they don't work for you. But you do have options, people. You really do. You have the ability right now to prepare. Buy the food. Buy the water. Get your freaking ammunition in now before that goes through the damn roof again. Get the guns now before this Democratic Party decides to make everything semi-automatic illegal, and that's what these idiots are working on. I know I haven't talked about that very much. I'm watching it intently. I'm watching it every day. I'm reading as much on it as possible. They are talking about coming after semi-automatic weapons. It will happen. They will find some way to do it. That's also with their Operation Lockstep of trying to ban everything, trying to make you go broke, trying to make you get sick, trying to destroy your food. They want you to not be able to afford gas. They don't want you to be able to afford your car. They want you to forfeit your home through foreclosures because you're not going to pay for your freaking water or your electric bills anymore. I mean, the lists are endless. Oh, not to mention, we're potentially going to get into a war with China and Russia, right? That's still on the table. The Democrats are knocking on heaven's door every day, going over to Taiwan, poking the hornet's nest, trying to see what will happen in China. Prepare now. I say it all the damn time. I'm going to say it again. Prepare now. And for a couple of you who like to email me every now and then, this is only for a couple of you who don't like my language. And you think that, oh, it's a good thing. I'm going to be, I'm going to show how great I am. And I'm going to message Doug and tell him, Doug, you curse a little bit too much. Even though Doug has just talked about apocalyptic things, and you're probably not prepared for three quarters of it, you're still going to email me and talk about how you're more Christian than me or my salvation is at risk. Let me worry about my mouth while I teach you how to survive. So, for the rest of you normal people, you appreciative people, thank you for listening to this show and spreading this show. Thank you for the encouraging emails that I do desperately need. Every now and then, I get a little down. Every now and then, I want to punch somebody in the face. Mainly a certain group of Democrats who are trying to destroy my great nation. And just every now and then, I have the time to sit and think and pray. And when I do, I pray for you. I pray for all you people that are out there, because we are not going to be ready as a nation for what's coming. Now, Dave Hodges and I go back and forth with this. He always says that what's coming is no longer coming, it's here. That's, in my opinion, that's halfway correct. There's a lot more coming. And it's going to be coming off the cusp of more calamities. Have you not noticed? With every calamity, is almost an immediate solution. Well, come on, guys. It's planned. So, let's get into this next article. Now that I'm off of my soapbox. All right. Let's talk about Dartmouth Undergraduate Journal of Science. Now, this is an article from March 10th, 2013. You see how far back in the memory machine I have to go to find this articles? Genetically engineered bioweapons, a new breed of weapons for modern warfare. Oh, by the way, this was sent to me by Bob Griswold. So, Bob, thank you very much. Kudos to you on this one. Genome sequencing has given to rise a new generation of genetically engineered weapons, bioweapons, carrying the potential to change the nature of modern warfare and defense. Biological weapons are designed to spread disease among people, plants, and animals through the introduction of toxins and microorganisms such as viruses and bacteria. The method through which a biological weapon is deployed depends on the agent itself, its preparation, its durability, and the route of infection. Attackers may disperse these agents through aerosols or food and water supplies. So, speaking of aerosols, when I was in Homeland Security for the last probably, gosh, I want to say 8 years, we were constantly monitoring and in communications with intelligence committees and intelligence agencies about the use of drones by terrorists to disperse aerosol biological weapons upon crowds of people at major sporting events. Last time I checked, that threat never went away. And it was a real actionable threat. So you have now been warned. Be advised. Although bioweapons have been used in a way for many centuries, a recent surge in genetic understanding, as well as a rapid growth in computational power, has allowed genetic engineering to play a larger role in the development of new bioweapons. In the bioweapon industry, genetic engineering can be used to manipulate genes to create new pathogenic characteristics aimed at enhancing the efficacy of the weapon through increased survivability, infectiousness, virulence, and drug resistance. While the positive societal implications of improved biotechnology are apparent, the black biology, quote, black biology of bioweapon development may be one of the gravest threats we will face. If you recall yesterday's show, I warned of the possibility of bioweapons released upon the public and how we don't have an answer for it. Let me expound upon that. The reason why we really don't have a good, I guess you could say, working methodology of how to handle a bioweapon attack, especially in law enforcement. All right, that's really the only place where I can come to speak about this is coming as a law enforcement officer and a security officer. Is that you can buy CRISPR-9 technology from Amazon, and then you can spider goat your hamster in your garage, you know, take some swabs from sick people, and then just start creating stuff. You know, what can you do? What can't you do? What are the limits if somebody really wants it? That's why bioweaponry is so dangerous. I think bioweaponry should be absolutely outlawed on this planet. However, they're not going to do it. Militaries will not do it. You know, for the longest time, Obama was taking down our nukes. He never took apart the bioweapons, guys. Never. That's where the advancements went, because there are more deadlier things out there than nuclear fire and cause less damage. Wow. Really just made myself reminisce on some old intel. Prior to recent advances in genetic engineering, bioweapons were exclusively natural pathogens. Agents must fulfill numerous prerequisites to be considered effective military bioweapons, and most naturally occurring pathogens are ill-suited for this purpose. By the way, all this is typically done at Fort Detrick, Maryland. First, bioweapons must be pronounced in large quantities. A pathogen can be obtained from the natural environment if enough can be collected to allow purification and testing of its properties. Otherwise, pathogens could be produced in a microbiology laboratory or in a bank, a process which is limited by pathogen accessibility and the safety with which the pathogens can be handled in facilities. To replicate viruses and some bacteria and living cells are obviously required. The growth of large quantities of an agent can be limited by the equipment and the space and the health risk associated with the handling of hazardous germs. In addition to the large-scale production, effective bioweapons must act quickly, be environmentally robust, and their effects must be treatable for those who are implementing the bioweapon. Recent advances in this field, our researchers, they continue to transition from the era of DNA sequencing into the era of DNA synthesis. It may soon become feasible to synthesize any virus whose DNA sequence is known, like COVID. This was first demonstrated in 2001. When Dr. Eckhard Wimmer recreated the polio virus, and again in 2005 when Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger and Terence Tumpey recreated the 1918 influenza virus. The progress of DNA synthesis technology will also allow for the creation of novel pathogens. According to biological warfare expert Dr. Stephen Block, genetically engineered pathogens could be made safer to handle, easier to distribute, capable of ethnic specificity, or be made to cause higher mortality rates. Let's rewind that for a second. What did Congress just recently come out and warn against? China using DNA for ethnic-based bioweapons. Okay. This article, wrote in 2013, plainly states that we are now capable of ethnic specificity. They've been able to do it for quite a while. The growing accessibility of DNA synthesis capabilities, computational power, and information means that a growing number of people will have the capacity to produce bioweapons. Scientists have been able to transform the four letters of DNA, adenine, cytosine, guanine, and thymine, into the ones and zeros of binary code. This transformation makes genetic engineering a matter of electronic manipulation, which decreases the cost of technique. According to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, foot stomp on the ground three times. Hillary Clinton, for all of you taking the test right now, quote, "The emerging gene synthesis industry is making genetic material more widely available. A crude but effective terrorist weapon can be made using a small sample of any number of widely available pathogens, inexpensive equipment, and college-level chemistry and biology." Scientists and genetic engineers are considering several techniques to increase the efficacy of pathogens in warfare. Number one, binary biological weapons. The first technique involves inserting plasmids, small bacterial DNA fragments, into the DNA of other bacteria in order to increase virulence or other pathogenic properties within the host of bacteria. Two, designer genes. According to the European Bioinformatics Institute, as of December 2012, scientists had sequenced the genomes of 3,139 viruses, 1,016 plasmids, and 2,167 bacteria, some of which are published on the internet and are therefore accessible to the public. With complete genomes available and aforementioned advances in gene synthesis, scientists will soon be able to design pathogens by creating synthetic genes, synthetic viruses, and possibly entirely new organisms. Number three, gene therapy. Gene therapy involves repairing or replacing a gene of an organism, permanently changing its genetic composition. By replacing existing genes with harmful genes, this technique can be used to manufacture bioweapons. Stealth viruses. Stealth viruses are viral infections that enter cells and remain dormant for an extended amount of time until triggered externally to cause disease. In the context of warfare, these viruses could be spread to a large population, and activation could either be delayed or used as a threat for blackmail. Imagine that. Do you remember all the rumors of the COVID-19 vaccine and that you'll be injected with stuff like this, and within a few years when the 5G cell towers go active, the worst part of the, quote, vaccine becomes active? Do you ever wonder if those are just speculations and rumors? Huh. Let's keep going. Number five, host-swapping diseases. Much like the naturally occurring West Nile and the Ebola viruses, animal viruses could potentially be genetically modified and developed to infect humans as a potent biowarfare tactic. Foot stomp on the ground three times. That's on the test class. COVID-19. Number six, designer diseases. Biotechnology may be used to manipulate cellular mechanisms to cause disease. For example, an agent could be designed to induce cells to multiply uncontrollably, as in cancer, or to initiate apoptosis, programmed cell death. Number seven, personalized bioweapons. In coming years, it may be conceivable to design a pathogen that targets a specific person's genome. This agent may spread through populations showing minimal or no symptoms, yet it would be fatal to the intended target. That is what they're talking about with the DNA-based bioweapons that Congress has known about for 10 years, and they just now told you. Now, riddle me this, Batman. Why did they just now tell you? In addition to creating these bioweapons, the emerging tools of genetic knowledge and biological technology may be used as a means of defense against such weapons, such as the human genome literacy. As scientific research continues to reveal the functions of genes and how genetic components affect diseases in humans, vaccines and drugs can be designed to combat particular pathogens based on an analysis of their particular molecular effect on the human cell. Immune system enhancement. In addition to enabling more effective drug development, human genome literacy allows for a better understanding of the human immune system. Thus, genetic engineering can be used to enhance human immune response to pathogens. As an example, Dr. Ken Alabic is conducting cellular research in pursuit of protection against the bioweapon anthrax. Viral and bacterial genome literacy, number three. Decoding the genomes of viruses and bacteria will lead to molecular explanations behind virulence and drug resistance. Without this information, bacteria can be engineered to produce bioregulators against pathogens. For example, Zoma Corporation has patented a bactericidal permeability increasing protein, BPI protein, made from genes inserted into bacterial DNA, which reverses the resistance characteristic of particular bacteria against some popular antibiotics. Number four, efficient bioagent detection and identification equipment. Because the capability of comparing genomes using DNA has already been acquired, such technology may be developed to identify pathogens using information from bacterial and viral genomes, such as a detector could be used to identify the composition of a bioweapon based on their genomes, reducing the present-day delays and resultant treatment and preventative measures. Unless it's a genome that was created in some kid's lab out of his basement and nobody knows what the hell it is. Number five, new vaccines. Current scientific research projects involve genetic manipulation of viruses to create vaccines that provide immunity against multiple diseases with one single treatment. Number six, new antibiotics and antiviral drugs. Currently, antibiotic drugs target DNA synthesis and protein synthesis and cell wall synthesis processes in bacterial cells. With an increased understanding of microbial genomes, other proteins essential to bacterial viability can be targeted to create new classes of antibiotics. Eventually, broad spectrum rather than protein specific antimicrobial drugs may be developed. But what, off the backs of how many millions dead? All right. The future of warfare. The revolution in molecular biology and biotechnology can be considered as a potential revolution of military affairs, states Colonel Michael Ainscough, who is an MD and MPH, according to Andrew Krippenvich, who originally coined the term RMA, Technological Advancement Incorporation of this new technology into military systems, military operational advancement, and organizational adaption in a way that fundamentally alters the character and conduct of conflict, are the four components that make up RMA. For instance, the Gulf War has been classified as the beginning of the Space Information Warfare RMA. From the technological advances in biotechnology, biowarfare with genetically engineered pathogens may constitute a future such RMA. That is the revolution of military affairs. In addition, the exponential increase in computational power, combined with the accessibility of genetic information, so that's computer power and genetic information, and biological tools to the general public and the lack of governmental regulation, raise concerns about the threat of biowarfare arising from outside of the military. The U.S. government has cited the efforts of terrorist networks such as Al-Qaeda to recruit scientists capable of creating bioweapons as a national security concern and has urged countries to be more open about their efforts to clamp down on the threat of bioweapons. Despite these efforts, biological research that can potentially lead to bioweapon development is far more international, far more spread out, and far more diverse than nuclear science. Researchers communicate much more rapidly with one another by means that no government can control. This was not true in the nuclear era, and that's according to David Kaye, who is the former chief of the U.S. Weapons Inspector in Iraq. Kaye, quote, is extraordinarily pessimistic that we, the United States, will take any of the necessary steps to avoid the threat of bioweapons absent their first actual use. There are those who say the First World War was chemical, the Second World War was nuclear, and that the Third World War, God forbid, will be biological. This concludes today's cheerful, optimistic broadcast. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Doug Thornton. You have been listening to the American Vindictor Show. I'm out of here. Stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.